Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, completely independently, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you very much for the good feedback and response to the last show I put up, which was Heather Cooper, my old friend, the astronomer in the UK. Heather has a massively busy schedule, as you will have heard. She's about to go on the Queen Mary liner and lecture about astronomy. Plus, I think she's got some book projects and broadcasting projects in the pipeline. Very, very well known. And if you're only just discovering her, well, I think she is truly the best, but I think I gave that impression anyway on the show, because that's how I feel. I'm just going to name check a few of you who've emailed recently, just to show you that I do read every email and I do act on every email, even if I don't instantly respond. I would be here for about an hour if I tried to go through all of the emails, but I'll just cherry pick a few here. There's a guy, Ash, who makes a point to me. Ash, I take your point, and I understand completely why he's saying it. So thank you for the email. Sean, thank you for your email. Craig asks me about Facebook and Twitter. You're right about Facebook, Craig. It's something that takes a bit of work to do properly. You know, some of the people who use Facebook effectively, like Richard Hoagland, they do it so well that if and when I do that, I want to do it properly and make sure that I can police it and also make sure that I can maintain it. That's the difficulty, because I have to go and try and make a living and make some money to pay the bills. I don't always have enough time to do the things around the show, so I concentrate on getting the shows out there. But it's all a work in progress, and I'm going to do more when I can, I promise. Jim, thank you for this, asking about the forums, as a lot of people have. Yep, apologies for the delay in the forums. We will be getting those together, and I think the best idea for those is either or. We can probably do them both, though. A guest suggestion forum or a UFO and paranormal experience forum, maybe combining the two in some way. But I've got to talk with Adam about this when we next get together and sit down and have a lunch and chew over what exactly we can do about this, because that is the next phase of our operations here, so we have to get into that, and we will. Linkwitz, thank you for your email. He says that I should speak to Michio Kaku. Very good idea. Michio Kaku, world-famous scientist, a guy who is so good that you can fire any scientific question at him, and he will explain what it's all about clearly and cogently. I've never quite met anybody like Michio Kaku. Now, let me tell you that I had him on the radio show about 5 years ago. I think I had him on twice, and the volume of phone calls for him was enormous, so I'll try and get him back, because I do have his phone number. Good suggestion. Lee, thank you for your good suggestion, too. Working on it. What else? Linda. Yes. Now, Linda, this is a very good point. It's all about the details that you provide to me, your email address and stuff like that. Here's a promise, because I've been on the receiving end of this and I know how it feels. We do not pass on or share anyone's data with anyone here. I wouldn't do that. Not what we're about. I would never do a show that did that. So please don't worry, Linda, and if it's something you're concerned about. Which brings me to another point. If you see other websites reposting these shows, please let me know. I'll tell you for why. I recently discovered, and I was not entirely pleased about it, that a website was passing on my shows, and they were passing them off as their own. So they'd sort of repackaged them, but still kept the stuff that I'd written on the website. And there were the shows, and then all around my shows, my work, were adverts. Well, I have to say, we've taken steps about that, and, you know, it's not very nice, because this is a show that is paid for by donations. You know, I do not plaster this site with adverts. The only bit of promotion I do is for Adam, my webmaster, and his company, Creative Hotspot, because he does this work for me, and I happen to believe Adam is a real talent, but I haven't got this site festooned with adverts, and that's not what it's about. So if you see this show or any of these shows posted somewhere else, and maybe surrounded by advertising, let me know, and we will deal with it. Amos, thank you for your email, and also Patrice in Switzerland, many thanks for yours. That's only a few of the emails that have come in over the last few weeks. I really couldn't get to all of them, but I promise you I do look at all of them. And if you want to contact me about anything to do with the show, I'm always grateful to hear from you. It's www.theunexplained.tv. That's the website address.
www.theunexplained.tv. And if you would like to make a donation, they are vital to this show continuing. So please do think about that. Go to the website www.theunexplained.tv. And if you can, make one. There is a PayPal link there. I'm going to be doing a newsletter very, very soon in between my various other activities. So that's coming to you. But the show's going really nicely with Adam Cornwell's help. We're developing it now. And as I say, I hope you enjoyed the Heather Cooper show. She is so good, though. You know, she's such a good speaker. What have we got coming up next? Well, the next show we do is David Icke. That'll be coming to you in a little while. But this show is one that appeared for me completely out of the blue. And sometimes those are the best shows, you know, the ones that you don't prepare for weeks and weeks. The ones that are just suggested to you, and you check out the person, and you think, yeah, that is definitely material for a show. So we're going to be talking to Lorna Byrne. Now, she is an Irish lady, and the word I was going to use first off is that she has powers, but she doesn't have powers, and I don't think she would like the word powers, but we'll check that with her. She has abilities, and she sees and experiences angels and a whole host of other things. But it is a fascinating story, and so fascinating is her story that I am being told that the people who published the Da Vinci Code are doing a six-figure book deal with her. Now, if Lorna Byrne was not interesting, those people would not be putting their money where their publishing rights are. That's just a fact. You know, this is business. So Lorna Byrne, we're about to talk to here on The Unexplained. Once again, thank you very much for staying in touch with the show. I'm going to put my maximum effort into it as we come to the end of 2010 and also go through 2011. With Adam Cornwell's help, we've built this show into something big during this year, and the people who've made it, what it's become more than anything else, are you. So thank you. Whether you're listening in California, whether you're listening in New York City, I must get back to New York soon. I'm getting New York withdrawal symptoms. I love New York. Didn't somebody say that once? So I must get back to NYC. Wherever you're listening in this world of ours, whether you're somewhere in the UK, where we started this show, thank you. Please keep supporting the show. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it a blast that something so tiny, so microscopic, can reach so many people? I still find it amazing. Okay, let's get to the guest now. Not going to waste any more time. Lorna Byrne is online to The Unexplained. Lorna, thank you for making time for us.
You're welcome. Delighted to talk with you.
Now, I have to say, I knew nothing of you, and I don't feel too guilty about that, because I've been going through your biography, and it says that you took the world by storm, which is, that's one hell of a claim, in May 2008 with your book Angels in My Hair, which I now, the penny sort of drops, because I'm sure I saw that on bookshelves, but I have to say I didn't buy it, and I know I should have. So you've enjoyed 2 years of staggering success by the looks of it.
Yes, because the book is sold worldwide and in 20 different languages. And I suppose the important thing to me is actually that the book's actually helping people. You know, Angels in My Hair and now Stairways to Heaven. It's getting such a great response.
Well, let me deal with this first. I read in, again, your biography that you've done and tied down a six-figure book deal with the people who published The Da Vinci Code. Is that so?
Yes, that's the way it was put.
Wow. Well, I mean, an amazing line, that. And you have to have something, I think, because, you know, it's a business and these people don't shell out money for nothing. So that is quite an achievement. What do they expect from you for that?
I don't know. I'm just doing my best. Like, you know, I'm just an ordinary person, I'm afraid.
I've got to say, I worked in Dublin for about 6 months or so when I was a boy broadcaster, and they had pirate radio stations there. They were illegal, but they were on land. I met some of the loveliest people, and your accent is reminding me of a lovely time in my life. Okay, let's tell your story now. Where do we start? Well, I guess we start in Dublin when you were a child and you discovered these abilities. So tell me about you growing up in Dublin.
Well, the best way for me to say that is, you know, from the moment I opened my eyes, I saw the angels as physically as I would see you if you were here in this room with me now. And as a young child, I didn't know they were angels until they told me.
Okay, what did you think they were?
I didn't think anything, because I thought, you know, when my mom was bending over me in the cot and fixing me up and all that, I thought my mom was aware of them as well. I was just reaching up trying to catch them, but I couldn't.
Even when you were that tiny, that little,
yeah,
you had these things surrounding you. What did they look like?
At that time, they looked about the size of a three-year-old child. That's about the size I can describe. And they gave such a human appearance, but they were so bright and colourful. And they actually floated in the air, you know. So I never questioned it. It was until a time my little brother had died before I was born, and I didn't even know of him. But I was playing with him, and one day the angels allowed us to touch. And it was when we touched our hands, you know, merged into each other. Mm. It was just so sparkly. And that was when the angels told me that Christopher was a soul, not an angel. And that's when it all started to be explained to me.
That's a very, well, it's a staggeringly heavy thing to lay on a child so young, though.
Yeah.
But I suppose if you are young, then you don't have the sort of rationality that we have when we get older. So maybe it's easier to take it on board when you're that age.
Well, I actually found it very easy to take it on board. I was a slow talker, and my parents brought me to the doctor and that, and they told my parents I was retarded, but I was dyslexic. You know, I'm not pronouncing that word properly. Mm. And in Ireland, they didn't know about that, and the angels had told me to keep it a secret, and I've actually kept it a secret right up until now. You know,
right.
And when you're a child, you tell nobody. You do keep the secret.
Now, in those days, though, you know, I worked in Ireland in the 1980s, and Ireland was on the way to becoming the modern country that it is now. I know it's going through some economic problems at the moment, but, you know, it had a fantastic decade or so. But when you were growing up, and I sense that we're the same sort of vintage, of course, the Catholic Church is still dominant in Ireland, you know, and the country was... I don't know whether you can call it behind the UK, because in many ways I like what it was all about, and I think it was advanced in the UK. But what I'm saying is that the understanding of the things that you were dealing with was perhaps not where it is now. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Ireland was way behind then. That's the only way I can put it as well. And, you know, that's another reason why if I had said anything, I would have been put into a mental institution as a child. You know, they would have done that if I had said, you know, Mom, there's angels around you, and if I had kept talking about them.
It's very good, though, to be so young and to keep that secret, though, because, you know, kids, you tell a kid something and they're bound to spill the beans sometime.
I know, I was very good. I'm actually amazed, you know, when people ask that question, I'd say, wow, I am amazed I did keep it all this length of time. And it was when I met my husband. I was actually just a young child of 10 when the angels told me a special angel was going to come along called Angel Elijah. And I was out fishing with my dad, and I had walked up along the river. And this magnificent angel, absolutely enormous, just walked across the water. And I was only 10 now, you have to remember. And I just looked at him. And, of course, the first thing I said, you know, can I not do that? You know, I wanted to walk across the water. But you have to remember, they're my friends, companions, and my teachers. And they've been that way all my life. So it's just really, really natural. But Angel Elijah, he had told me about the young man I would marry, and he had told me he would become ill and we wouldn't grow old together. Mm. That was really hard, even at 10. You know, I gave out, you know, about that. And I always remember, you know, my husband has died, of course, and we didn't grow old together.
But you must have gone through, and it's an awful thing when you lose somebody that close.
Yeah.
It's an awful thing when you lose anybody in your family, but when you lose somebody that close. But to go through your life knowing that, and I imagine over time you came to trust what they told you, so knowing with certainty that would happen, how did you handle that?
It was actually really very, very hard, you know, falling in love with him and everything like that, and knowing that we would marry and have children, and actually just watching him, you know, become ill as time went on. But you couldn't tell him. How could you tell someone that and, you know, stop them living their lives? I would have stopped him living his life. And
so you had to live for the time that you had to, I suppose you had to maximize every moment.
Yeah, you did. You did. You had to do that. But another thing I always remember, you know, telling him, and I know I have written it in the book as well, but that was, you know, telling him that about the angels. The angels told me I must tell him, but only a certain amount. I was never allowed to tell him all the secrets. And I was out, we'd gone out for a date and we were sitting in the car back outside the house. And I said to him, do I have something to tell you? And, he just looked at me and said, what? And I just said to him, I see angels. And he just stared and looked at me, with his hands on the wheels, on the steering wheel. And he said, Lorna, only priests and nuns see angels, not ordinary people like
you. Did he think
you'd
been on the Liffey water?
I think he did.
So how did you take it from there? How did you convince him that you really did?
I actually just gave him a peck on the cheek that time and ran into the house and said to the angels, that's it, he's gone. But he wasn't, just as they said he wouldn't. He would have noticed things, through my life. At times I was allowed to tell him a little. And at times, he would be very concerned about me.
I'm surprised that through that life, through that childhood and into your marriage, there will have been times when you were sort of communing with these angels, you call them. How were you never caught?
I don't know. Well, Joe would have noticed. Mm. Joe would have noticed at times when I was going through a hard time to do with something, to do with the angels and people and the world and that. And at times he would be concerned. He would ask me what was wrong and I would just say everything is fine. I wasn't allowed to share everything with him. But he was a great support and the angels were correct about him, that he would support me and not interfere or anything like that. And sure, that was the most wonderful thing. And, the angels used to say when I was a child I would write, but as a child you take no notice. But then when I was married and it was my third child, I was wheeling her home in the pram and the angel Michael came up behind me and said, it's getting close to the time for you to start to write. And I just stopped and looked at him and said, Michael, I can't even read or write properly. How on earth is God and you expect me to write a book?
Well, how did they fix that for you, if they did?
It was unbelievable because now it happened years later. I just said, yes, okay, I'll do it. And as Michael had said, things would happen, miracles would happen, people would help. And that's exactly what happened. The first person gave me a laptop, with the speakeasy. Mm. So I actually use the same laptop now.
What an amazing story.
Yeah,
so you are literally
everything.
Yourself, well, I say yeah. Yourself taught, but I suppose you would say you were taught by something beyond yourself.
Yes, yeah.
Let me just take you back and, we'll stop if it's painful, because I know, it must be. But when Joe passed, even though you knew about this and even though you had support, you say, from the angels, everybody in this situation, look, I lost my mother a few years ago, and you go through the various phases of the initial shock and the acceptance and then the raging against it. You wouldn't be human if you didn't. Did they help you to get through it? And if they did, how?
They did help me, but it didn't actually make it any easier, to be honest with you. They comforted me, even on the morning that, that Joe died, all the angels were there, and I saw his soul leave.
And did you ask them the question that any of us would have asked them, I guess, why does it have to be this way?
I did. I asked that question even as I used to watch him getting sicker and sicker, and I used to say, why did he have to be sick? Why can't he grow old? All the questions anyone would ask. And I was just told that this was his life, and both their lives were intertwined. And I know that Joe wouldn't have been able to cope with me doing what I'm doing now.
So it almost sounds like some kind of big cosmic plan somewhere that everybody comes into our lives for a finite period. We can't live parallel lives and go at the same time. We're all on different paths. So it sounds like this was all mapped out for you from before you were born.
I wouldn't say all mapped out, because you have to remember we all have the choice. I could have said no.
Could you?
Yes, but they would have kept pestering me. I know I wouldn't have had. I did say no for a long time. I did say, no, I can't, kept putting it off and all of that. but they just kept pushing me to say yes and to start to have the courage and the confidence. And I suppose the angels just built up that courage and confidence within me.
Did you ever feel that perhaps you did have some kind of mental problem that was making your mind tap into something that most of us can't see, or worse than that, these were just hallucinations?
No, I don't feel that way at all, because I see them physically, you know, and because I have to smile when I tell you this, you know, on occasions people turned around and said to me, you know, Lorna, we saw you with that young man. And I wouldn't have been with any young man. I know they saw an angel walking beside me. It's just the angel gave such a human appearance. It was like the angel Michael once in the college in Maynooth. You know, it's where a lot of priests and that at that time, young men becoming priests. And I was walking in there, and the angel Michael was with me, and he gave such a human appearance as we walked together. He dressed like a priest. He would always do that. And two priests came towards us, you know, and with the prayer books in their hand, and they said, "Hello, Father." They ignored me altogether.
Oh, really?
You know,
that is staggering, absolutely
that
staggering.
That is, you know.
If you were to sit down and discuss, and maybe you have at times with priests or representatives of the church, their line traditionally has been, and I know this because, you know, I'm from Liverpool, and half my family is Catholic and half my family is sort of Protestant, so there's Catholic in the background. If the Liverpool church back in the day is anything to go by, if you'd said anything like this to them, they'd have told you it was the work of the devil.
I haven't actually got that at all from them. Any priests that I meet,
really?
You know, that come to talk to me, any nuns, you know, they tell me to keep up the good work. It actually has given them back faith. And you have to remember, I see the guardian angels and the angels with everybody, regardless of the religion, you know, or their nationality. They can be Muslims, Jews, Protestants, Catholics. I'd be shocked if I saw someone walk down the street and didn't see the guardian angel with them, that light behind them.
So have the angels told you over the years anything about religion and the way that we do it? Have they told you that actually it's right and the people who are religious are on the right track? Is that what they've said?
Well, we are kind of on the right track. What they have shown me many, many times, just like when I was in one of the Chester Beatty Library, what had happened to me in there spiritually, and, you know, the angel Michael again holding my hand, and on the screen there was a pilgrimage for Mecca, and it was just the joy of praying and seeing all those people praying there and being in among them and being told that all religions should be joined together, you know, even in that pilgrimage of prayer, you know, not just the Muslims themselves.
So what a wonderful message in this time when there are so many different faiths,
yeah.
And down through history they've been at each other's throats off and on, to know that actually, you know, we're all, it's a route to something similar, it's just different ways of maybe doing the same thing, if that's what they said.
It is to join together. I know that is kind of the plan, to get us all to join together, to be under the one umbrella.
Do they tell you prophetic things, Lorna? Do they tell you things that are going to happen? Did you know about 9/11?
No one ever asked me that question. Over the years, I have been shown things that, you know, that were possible to happen. You have to remember, I just see the angels working very, very hard to stop things from happening.
Why didn't they stop the likes of Nile? I mean, I know, well,
yeah,
forgive me for the question,
yeah,
but I have to ask it. Why didn't they stop that? The awful things that happen in this world, the people who die, the tyrants, the torturers, the vile individuals, the Saddam Husseins, why don't they step in and stop this?
That's because the part I hate talking about is that the other side exists as well. We listen to the other side for power and control. And we use God as an excuse for war as well, for that power and control and material things.
So you're saying there is a dark side and you're tapped into the light side, but you're aware of something else?
Yes.
What's the something else?
I don't like saying, I was brought up a Catholic, so I would call him Satan or the devil, but I don't like saying that, if you know what I mean. So I say the other side. I'm afraid it does exist.
Well, that's interesting, because there's a guy who used to go on radio. Sadly, he's no longer with us, but yeah. I used to find him riveting, and I don't know if you know of his name, but his name is Father Malachi Martin. And he was an Irish guy who went to America and resided in America. And he used to go on radio. And if you ever get to hear any of his material, there are recordings out there. Father Malachi Martin said exactly that. We need to be aware that there is evil.
There is. And I see it every day. And I see you have to remember, you know, everyone has a guardian angel, as I said, regardless of the religion. And we all have a soul, each and every one of us. So it's only our bodies that die and rot away in the ground. We actually live. But there is the other side. And the other side works very, very hard and gets in there, you know, when we're angry or being hurt or again, you know, God doesn't cause the wars. You know, man listens to the other side and, you know, causes all that hurt and pain unnecessarily. We shouldn't be trying to control someone else.
So are you saying that the other side is there to spread confusion? And
yes.
When people get confused
yes.
about messages, they start getting the wrong end of the stick, and that's why the trouble happens.
Yeah, and that's why you know what's even happening today. Like, I met a man, you know, about 2 years ago, and he says to me, Lorna, I have read your book, but your country wouldn't allow it into my country. And he started telling me a story about where he was from and where the war is at the moment, and bombs and fighting and shooting, and, you know, his home being bombed as well, and the fear of losing his family and they running for their lives. And he believed he had lost his father in that. And he never got back to the exact place, to his home. But he had gone as a young man and had listened to the other side. And it was only afterwards he had realized that he had done horrible things as well. And he says to me, how can you kill revenge? In revenge, he listened to the other side, and he looked now at his wife and children, and he said, you know, if someone came in here in revenge and killed my wife and children, it would shatter him, because he had already done it himself in revenge because of war. It's like, you know, if someone strikes out and hits you, if you can stand up, try and find a peaceful solution and not strike back.
And is the ultimate end of all things, as far as you've been told and as far as you know, Lorna, are things meant in the fullness of time to resolve themselves? I'm thinking about your own country.
Yeah.
And you know that I lived
yeah.
there for a very short time, and
yeah.
I love Ireland, north and south. Wonderful people. But, if, you know, there was such conflict there, and you grew up through it, and so did I.
Yeah.
But eventually peace did come about, partly thanks to Tony Blair, we have
yeah.
to say, and the peace
exactly.
agreement and all
yeah.
the mediation
yeah.
there. So is that what's meant to happen? When there is conflict of that kind, ultimately we do get to peace, but perhaps not in a timescale that all of us will see.
Well, even as a young child, I was told, you know, that peace would come, you know, to Northern Ireland, and that Northern Ireland would be the cornerstone of peace, you know, if those involved listened. And it does seem as if those involved listen, because we have peace up there. But I know it's still very delicate. I'm still being told that.
But did you ever think that you would see in your lifetime the sight of the likes
yeah.
of Martin McGuinness and
yeah.
you know, Ian Paisley,
yeah.
the two Ian Paisleys, you know, the
yeah.
senior and junior together?
I knew I would see it in my lifetime. No one ever asked me that, and, you know, so, yes, I knew I would, but yes, I know it's still in danger.
What have you seen that you haven't, you know, that hasn't come to pass yet? You've just said the words, we're still in danger. Well, we had a warning very recently that, you know, dissident Republican groups may try and do whatever they might do. Do you know about that?
Well, that, again, is those people listening to the other side actually wanting control. They enjoy it. And it is for, and I know the people of Northern Ireland, every time something like that happens, they stand up and they say, you know, it's not on, they're not going to allow it, you know, the other side to destroy their lives. And I have to say I'm very proud of them, but I know Northern Ireland really has to do this, because other countries will follow. around the world. Ireland, you know, Northern Ireland is the cornerstone. That's the words the angels had given me for peace for the world. So it's actually really important we don't allow, you know, those that are threatening at the moment, you know, to undo it. Mm. We just can't allow that to happen.
Well, thank you for talking to me about that, because I think it's, you know, it's important to talk about that too. Are there things that you have been told to do with 2012? You know, the Mayan prophecies and all of those things that we've talked about here on this show. And I'm not sure what to believe about any of that. But there are quite a few groups and individuals who say that something is going to happen in 2012. As far as you know, is it?
The angels haven't had me very concerned over it at all. So I'm actually not one bit concerned over it at all. All as I know is that, you know, I'm to share the secrets I have and to write these books and to help people to change for the better and to make this a better world and to give them a glimpse of the possible futures for the world. You know, and that is what I'm doing. But they don't have me worried. I know we have to change a lot of things. You know, but...
Well, there are people who say that what we're facing, and some of these people are more anchored in, you know, the world as it is, that we can see, and some of them are more anchored in the spirits and the stars. But whoever they are, some of them say that the future is going to be a future of political instability and economic meltdown. Is that what you see, what you're told?
Well, they're looking at the material things, you know, in that way, you know, making money and all of that kind of thing. I don't look at the world in that way, because I see a lot of peace coming to the world as well, a lot of things being sorted out. But I know we are in battle with the good and the bad.
I know South Africa very well, and I first went out there to train some broadcasters back in 1994, right after the elections. And I loved the place, and I was so emotional, I was nearly brought to tears by it, the fact that because of the work by people like Mandela, people had come together. But of course, now there are elements in South Africa who might destabilize it. And every time it seems to look a little bit iffy, like when Eugene Terblanche, that white supremacist leader, when he was killed, it looked like things might explode, and they didn't. South Africa is always saved from that, it seems.
Well, that's why we all have to stand up and be counted, play our part, you know, speak up, you know, even within our own countries when something is wrong, or, you know, or there's an injustice being done within our own country. And prayer is very powerful, so we have to pray for all other countries.
I'm glad you said that. There are people that I know and that I'm in contact with, and I can't take any sides about it, but I know that these people call themselves light workers, and they are praying and actively concentrating on good and light and harmony and all the things you've just been talking about. Do you buy into any of that?
Yes, because the angels have showed me how powerful prayer is. You know, anytime, you know, I see people praying, regardless of their religion as well, there's billions of angels there praying with them as well, and those prayers and messages are being carried to heaven in such a flash of light that it's beyond our understanding. So prayer is really powerful, and I know that's what's keeping the balance the way it is in the world.
This is a silly example, and I've never actually said this to anybody, and for some reason I feel I can say it to you. When I was a teenager in Liverpool, I was pretty fat. I was quite weighty, and I was very, very unhappy with it. You know, when you're a teenager, you're very, very concerned about your appearance. And I prayed and prayed and prayed to lose weight. Now, somehow, yes, I did cut down on what I ate to an extent, but within 3 months, I went from being a fat teenager to being ultra slim. And in fact, the school thought it was quite funny in a way. The school were worried about me. They thought I had maybe some terrible disease and was losing weight terribly. My trousers fell down once at school. I'd lost so much weight. But I prayed for that, and I've always believed, and I've never, ever spoken to anybody about this apart from my immediate family, I've always believed that something helped me.
Yes, your guardian angel helped you. I know that without a doubt. And in you, in praying, you know, you allowed it to happen for the angel, you know, to empower your angel to help you really.
So you have to give them permission.
They do an awful lot of things without permission. But it's like if you say yes, that's what I say to people. You know, whether you're an atheist or you laugh or you sneer about it, you've nothing to lose. you know, give it a go and just watch your life change for the better, you know, gradually. I'm hearing that from all around the world. You know, I'm even hearing from young people in Colombia, you know, saying, you know, they never knew they had a guardian angel, and now that they know, they're actually trying to be good. You know, you're hearing from teenagers in schools who have been bullying other children, and they have stopped. And you're hearing from, you know, bosses and jobs, you know, who have been giving their employees a really hard time and been mean to them, that they have changed their attitude.
What, you mean they've changed their attitude because their bullied employees prayed for them to change, or because they've tried to change themselves?
No, because they tried to change themselves, and because they became aware that they do have a guardian angel. You know,
and what sorts of events can make...
Apart.
Well, it's just assuming that, I mean, that we know there are lots of people like that out there, but just assuming there is somebody out there like that, and they could do with changing because they're making everybody else suffer, what sort of events can make them realise that there's more to life than all of that, and to make them want to make that change? What sort of things happen?
I don't know. The only one thing that I can say to you now, and this is because, you know, a lot of men would walk up to me and they would say this, would be that they have actually, and I hate saying it over air, that they actually read the book and it gave them a wake-up call. It made them change their life, and that's what seems to be happening with people who are reading it.
Well, I'm due in a little while to take a plane flight, and I'm going to make you a promise. There's a Waterstones at the airport.
Okay.
I'm going to buy your book, and I'm going to take it on the plane, and I'm going to read it.
Okay.
that I promise.
Well, you'll get to know me more, so.
Lorna, well, I have to say I've loved talking to you. I've got to ask you this. Do you consider yourself to be, and are you, a psychic?
I don't consider myself that. I just consider myself an ordinary person. Because to me, all this is just so natural. I know nothing else. I've seen angels from the moment I opened my eyes. They have been my teachers, my companions, my best friends. You know, they've been in my life right now, this very, very day, this very moment. And I know they're in your office there with you now too, and I know your guardian angel is there, even though I can't see it, but I know it is.
Oh, well, I hope so, Lorna, I genuinely do. I've got a lot of biographical material about you, and I was reading it through last night. I loved this story, and I was quite moved by this story about an injured girl who was injured in all the turmoil that there was in Sarajevo, you know, in that sort of Balkan area. She was badly injured by a grenade that was thrown into her home. And according to this, and I'll read it, it says, Lorna, without the use of X-rays, was not only able to point out where all the shrapnel pieces were, but to indicate what the effect of every piece was on the girl's body. So the question that would follow from that is, how did you do that?
I don't know. I just saw sometimes, that's what, as a child, the angels used to teach me how to look at animals, you know, even plants. And it's just something they taught me how to do.
But have they taught you to heal when you see what's wrong? Can you heal? Do you think you can heal?
I always say it's not me. I always say it's God. You know, people would say to me, Lorna, you blessed me, you prayed over me, and, you know, my pain went, or, you know, whatever was wrong with them, you know.
Of course, the skeptics would say that is, the skeptics are bound to say, and they're bound to email me about this as well and say, well, that's probably mind over matter.
They could say that, but I'd be absolutely delighted when I hear from someone at a book signing that said to me, you know, they were at a book signing a year ago and they had cancer and I blessed them and they've gone into remission. And to me, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what anyone else says.
And of course, we always have to say in these circumstances, even though I'm on the internet and we're not on the radio, if I was on the radio, I'd have to say, well, that is what you say. So I'm making that point now that you are saying this. Yeah. You have some very high-level friends in Ireland, including the likes of Daniel O'Donnell, who within the Irish community in this country and around the world is a massive, massive star, and the cause as well. So you've been sort of elevated from, and you still sound very, very grounded and very, very ordinary, but you've suddenly been elevated into showbiz. Haven't you? You've certainly been elevated into, you know, into those realms of people who are making a lot of money and are very famous.
Well, let's say when I'm in their company, they're very ordinary to me and I'm very ordinary to them. You know, I don't think of things in maybe the way everyone else out there thinks of things.
How do you think of things then?
They're just lovely, ordinary people. We just chat and talk ordinarily.
And if you do you start, the danger is, isn't it? And I, listening to you, I don't think that you're ever going to fall into this trap, is that you start to feel like a celebrity yourself.
No, I don't think I could ever feel that way. You have to remember, you know, I have grown up without a penny in my pocket. Now I know I have money now in my pocket, but you can't take any of that to heaven with you. When you die, you have to give it back.
Oh, well, my grandmother in Liverpool.
You can't.
My grandmother in Liverpool, who had loads of Irish sayings, some of which I cannot repeat, she used to say, there's no pocket in a shroud.
Exactly.
And that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I tell you what follows on from that then is, what are we all here to do then? What's the purpose? What's the point of this life? Why are we here?
I always say to people, we're here to actually live life. We're a human being. And we're here to live that life, you know, to the full. But we have a soul as well, you know. That actually makes us more human. So that's why we don't die. It's important to live life. That's what I tell everyone. Sure, look at me. I have lived my life up till now, talking to you on the phone, and that is the most important thing. It's so sad when you hear of young people and even older taking their life. I'd beg them not to. I'd tell them, if they do such a thing, I'll clout them.
Yeah, I haven't heard that word for a long time. Do you believe in reincarnation?
Yes, it does. It does happen, but not in abundance. Not in you know, one journalist said to me that, you know, when she dies, is she going to come back, be reborn straight away? And I said to her, no, why on earth would you want to come back straight away? You know, you wouldn't.
Well, I tell you what, if I was to pop my clogs, I would want a bit of a break, I think, Lorna.
Yes.
Just to take stock of it all.
Definitely. You don't want to come back. I can reassure you, you don't. You only come back if you're sent, you know, but you don't come back otherwise. And I know that's very hard for people because they say, what about our loved ones? But we can do more for them, as I say, in heaven, than we can when we're on earth.
When you die, do you think you're going to meet Joe? When I die, am I going to meet my mum? Do we meet the people who are close?
You will. You will. I don't doubt that whatsoever. You know, I saw Joe's soul, you know, before he died even. And I feel very privileged when God allows me to see someone's soul. And your soul is more beautiful than any angel. It is that speck of light that is God. And that's another reason why your guardian angel never leaves you for one second of your life and is even there with you as you die and pass over.
And how do we get nominated a guardian angel? I mean, how, if there's a pool of angels up there, maybe there's a college of angels or something, how's one picked for me or for you?
Actually, I don't know. They have never told me. See, I can't tell you what they don't tell me or haven't shown me.
So do you listen to what they tell you? You don't ask them questions?
I do ask them questions, but, you know, not always will they answer. I could ask them a question and they suddenly start talking about something else, and it's like as if what I've asked is very, very trivial. Mm. But years later, they can come back to it. It's like at the time, I not to know. But the only thing I can say is the guardian angel is with that soul, you know, in heaven before it even comes and is conceived here on earth.
Now, in your new book, in your latest book, the one that followed on from Angels in My Hair, I'm told that you introduce us to a gigantic angel, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Jimmison,
yeah.
Who supposedly guards the planet. How's that?
I call him the guardian angel of the planet. I was about 5 when I met him first, and he was a giant. That's the only way I can describe him. He was over above the trees. He was just so enormous, you know, red and gold with just a tint of black, and he had what looked like a big stick to me. And the other angels around me, you know, at the garden wall kept saying, Lorna, don't be afraid, because I'd never seen an angel this big. You know, I was looking up at him, and he seemed to go up forever. And he tapped the stick on the ground, and I felt the earth tremor. And I legged it into the house.
As you would.
I was terrified. And I suppose, you know, I still see him, and he still does make me nervous and a little afraid.
So there are grades of angel. There are senior ones and there are less senior ones. Is that what we're saying?
Well,
here?
I suppose that is a human expression we use. Yet I have never seen an angel command another angel, you know, in the way we have generals and things like that. I never see them. You know, it's not like as if one angel is below another. But yet, Michael, the angel that is with me at times, he is an archangel. Mm. You know, and Jimison is, you know, I suppose, I don't know whether you could call him an archangel, but I'm being told he's, you know, he's the guardian angel of the earth.
Does Jimison believe in global warming?
He gets very, very frustrated with us because he's trying to control all of that. He's trying to keep the earth, the spirit of the earth, calm as well from twisting and turning too much. And it's his relationship between the spirit of the earth and, you know, and us.
So he's mediating between us and our sometimes stupidity.
Yes.
and the earth itself.
He can be very... very angry, very frustrated with us, and he's the only angel that I'm ever allowed to feel this with. And that is why I wrote about him this time, because we do need to wake up and realize, you know, this planet is a gift and it is alive as well. And we have to be, you know, we have to nourish it as well. We have to be careful.
Okay.
You know, it's important, because if everything dies on the planet, and I know that's one of the possible futures that I have been shown, where, you know, there's no grass or anything like that. You know, the planet just looks dreadful.
And do you know why that happened? Is that global warming? Is that what we've done to the environment? What is that?
It is like, you know, even to do with war, it has to do with global warming. It has to do with chemicals, the whole lot. We have to learn not to take our planet for granted. You know, the way we even take the air we breathe for granted.
And if we're not more sensible, if we're not brought to our knees and brought to our senses, and if we don't behave differently, this is going to happen?
Well, I definitely don't want it to happen.
But you're saying that this is a possible scenario that might happen. How long would it take for that to happen? How many generations?
I don't know. I'm not even going to go there.
Wow.
I don't want to go there. That's what I had to tell.
It's pretty scary, isn't it?
It
very
is
scary.
And that's why I write about the angel Jimison. And, you know, even there when I was on a plane back a few months ago, I saw his staff, you know, his stick come through the clouds down to the earth. You know, and it frightened me because I was on the plane. Mm-hmm. You know, in that way, I didn't see him himself. You know, we just have to remember, you know, we can't just take for granted, you know, the air we breathe, even the rain. You know, we've just got to be, all play our part, even in our own home.
And fundamentally, this planet is a beautiful place, and some of the most unhappy people that we come across in our lives, maybe, what do you think, are some of the people who've got the most, and some of the people who smile the most have the least.
Yes, because I have met many people who would have so many material things, but they wouldn't be happy, you know, because they would say to me, you know, they have nothing really.
And isn't it funny that the one person who tried to get that message across when he visited Twickenham a few weeks ago was a man I knew very little about until I did a bit of research about him, and that was Pope Benedict. Whatever you may think of Pope Benedict, he said, you know, you need to realise that money and possessions and wealth and all the things that we, what's that word, aggrandise ourselves with, whatever it is, all these things that we collect don't mean anything.
They actually don't. You can't bring them with you, and they don't give you, you know, that happiness and love that you need. You know, the happiness and love is actually, you know, priceless. You know, we have to start to try and even enjoy feeling the rain on our face, even enjoy, you know, taking a breath. You know, I have written about in the second book there about the rain falling on us and the rain touching me. And I met a lady at a book signing, and she says, Lorna, I'm actually trying now to enjoy even the rain, to feel that happiness, and I'm starting to get it, you know. And it was lovely to hear that, because that's what we have to realize, the things that are around us that are priceless, you know, and if we destroy them, they're gone forever.
I know some people who are living high-powered, high-pressure lives, and some of them would like to pack it in. If they packed it in and lived a more connected life, you know, they connected themselves to the earth and they enjoyed the rain and they took time out to think about things and help people, would they be helped by their guardian angel to get through it?
Yes, of course they would. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know a lot of people, you know, that's what I said to you, you know, a lot of men would come up to me, you know, and they would be businessmen or men that, you know, had a lot of wealth as well. And they would say, you know, the book gave them a wake-up call. And the wake-up call is that they realize, you know, that all the material things, you know, actually mean nothing to them really in the end. It's those that they love and care for that they actually forgot.
Mm. Well, listen, you've given me a lot to think about. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
And
I have to say, you know, you are a very calming influence. You sound so inwardly calm, and you obviously have something. Thank you very, very much. Tell me briefly what the next year is going to bring for you. Presumably you're travelling the world and doing all those things that people do when they have successful books out.
Well, I suppose I will be doing all of that, but I suppose the most important thing is actually for me is to be helping everybody around the world, is to help this world to change for the better. And my family, of course, my youngest daughter, who's at home at the moment in Ireland, texted me saying, "Mom, I'm missing you. When are you coming home?"
That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Exactly.
That is what it's all about. But I have this feeling about you, and let's see if it happens, but they are going to love you in America. I think you're going to do a tour of America.
Okay.
I think so. And I get this feeling about Chicago. I'm not claiming I'm psychic, but let me know if it happens.
I will indeed.
Lorna Byrne, you're lovely to talk to. Everybody has a website these days. What's yours?
It's just lornabyrne.com.
All right. Well, okay. I know you're I'm talking to you from Liverpool now, so I hope you enjoy your trip back to Ireland, and thank you for making time to talk to me.
You're welcome.
Well, as ever, I will let you make your own mind up about Lorna Byrne. Let me know what you think about her. But I was interested to get her biography from the publisher, and sometimes you get these biographies and they are a few lines, maybe with a nice photograph, that leave you asking more questions than they answer. Her biography is very comprehensive, I have to say, and one of the best I've ever seen. I'll put a link to Lorna Byrne's website at my website, which is www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. And it's the same web location. If you want to make a donation to this show, please think about that. Or if you want to contact me about anything to do with the show, how you think it might be improved, future guest suggestions, all gratefully received. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for the fantastic work he's been doing on the site and the show. And also thank you to Martin for the theme tune that we depend on here. Thanks, Martin. And thank you most of all to you for taking time to listen to and support The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes. Please take care of yourself, and I will see you soon here at The Unexplained.